Good afternoon, everybody. You all remember this moment. A couple of you missed out, but most of you remember that fantastic moment. And probably most of you have already seen these mug shots, have you? Look at that one there, complete with our friend Michael, who took the honours in getting...
Made it happen,
did he? What? And friend Thomas on the other side, look, brilliant. And then we have a cast of thousands. We all fit into this one here. So we're going to be moving towards As You Like It in the next few weeks. But we're not there yet. Our unit outline, in fact, if you look at the unit outline, what does it tell us? It tells us that this week is week 4, poetry in the anthology. And next week, we move to prose in the anthology. And then we've got 3 weeks on prose, and then we move into drama in the last 2 weeks. The reason I've handed out these to you today, these As You Like It sheets, is because I want to spend a little bit of time at the end of today's session looking at the way As You Like It has got both poetry in it and prose in it. And so when we come to look at this more closely, we'll get a taste of how Shakespeare was working with three genres at once. He was creating a drama, but he was using prose within that drama and poetry to give it this rich flavour that we tasted the other night at the Opera House.
What are
prose again? Prose is, well, let me just show you here, look. There is, if you have a look at that on the screen there, Michael, prose is something that goes from one side of the book to the other. Prose is, most writing is prose. And prose is what you read in a history book or a novel. But poetry is shaped in some sort of a way. That's just one example. And the difference is that poetry has got regular rhythmic patterns. Let me just set up the blackboards here because I need to write some comments on here as we go along. This one out. So when I'm talking to you now, I'm emphasizing certain words. The words I emphasize are the meaning words. All the joining words like and but and thee and a are not stressed, but the meaning words are stressed. And I can stress them deliberately. Sit still and listen. So prose has got rhythm in it, but it's not regular. One of the first poems that we're going to look at today is the one that Thomas here begged me to do. It's not quite right, but he certainly had a hand in it. And it's
page
on
23.
Page 23. And we're going to come to it shortly, but just listen to the first stanza. It was somewhere in September and the sun was going down when I came in search of copy to a darling river town. Come and have a drink, we'll call it. 'Tis a fitting name, I think. And 'twas raining for a wonder up at Come and Have a Drink. It was somewhere in September and the sun was going down. Now, if I try and show you what the rhythm is, it goes like this. Da, 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 da. Da, 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 da. It's four beats, and whenever we're talking about poetry, the sideways slash, or call it a, what else do we call it?
Slash.
A slash. The sideways slash is the strong beat, and the cross is the short beat. And there are many different kinds of rhythm in poetry. Shakespeare uses da, da, da-da, 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 which is an iambic rhythm. It's not important for you to know these names yet. But this rhythm, da-da-da, 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 is called a... It's not working. It's called a dactyl. Dactyl. And weak, strong is called iambic. Or you call it an iambic rhythm, or you call it a dactylic rhythm. So the simple point I'm wanting to make here is that poetry uses regular rhythmic patterns. Regular. As opposed to prose. Prose has also got rhythmic patterns in it, but it's not regular. It's irregular. And poetry also uses poetic devices of sound. Things like alliteration, consonants, onomatopoeia, repetition, all those things. Those things do come up in prose as well, but they're used more intensively in poetry. And poetry, of course, uses rhyme. Not always. Modern poetry has moved away from rhyme, and modern poetry often prides itself on being free verse. Modern poetry often says, I'm free. And what it does, it refuses to use rhyme, refuses to use regular stanza patterns, but that makes it no less poetry. And we'll see a few examples of that this afternoon.
So why is it just not prose?
Why is it just not prose?
Free verse,
it's set out in stanzas. It's not like this, but it is shaped. It has a form, usually has a form. There are some examples of poems that are called prose poems. Now that's another kettle of fish altogether. There's a prose poem when a person writes a paragraph that doesn't read like a very normal paragraph because it's very intense language, but it's not shaped. It's just shaped like a piece of prose. So there are lots of overlaps between the genres. Okay? There are some examples in here. If you look on page...
Some lines appear very long, some lines appear very short.
That's it. If you look on page 10, see on page 10 how this artist, this poet,
that's concrete poetry.
That's very good. Concrete poetry is when the form is really dominant. So in this poem, Swan and Shadow, you've got the words creating a visual image of the swan reflected underneath in the water. And it's a very clever poem because the words actually relate or conjure up what's being said. Dusk, above the water hang the loud flies, here, oh so grey, then what a pale signal will appear when soon before its shadow fades, where here in this pool of opened eye in us, know upon us as at the very edges of where we take shape in the dark air, the object bears its image, awakening ripples of recognition that will brush darkness up into light. Even after this bird, this hour, both drift by atop the perfect sad instant now. So, poetry obviously have many different forms, but here we've got, as Derek has said, concrete poetry. Concrete poetry means not poetry made out of concrete, but it means that it's shaped to look like its subject matter. And there are some very interesting examples. The one next to it, Mae Swenson, Bleeding. First line says, stop bleeding, said the knife. I would if I could, said the cut. Stop bleeding, you make me messy with this blood. And if you look down the poem, there is a knife cut all the way down through the center of the poem. Now people have got very clever ideas about how they can make the meaning of the poem comes through the visualization. So there's a big overlap between poetry and painting here. The visual dimension really amplifies the actual meaning. We could spend a lot of time discussing these two poems, but I don't want to do that just now. This was mainly an answer to Mike's question about what's the difference between poetry and prose. So I hope you've got a bit more of an idea about that now. So I want to go back, first of all, to Leo and talk about a couple of things that are relevant to our unit this semester. So first of all, you may have noticed that I've just put this in here. Post your WordPress URL here. Now if I go back to the practice blog space, then I am greeted by an absolutely fantastic array of blogs and comments. I spent yesterday evening reading through this lot and commenting on most people's blogs. And it's fantastic what you're doing. I think it's really great. And when we look at one of our poems shortly by Robert Frost, I'm going to go into Michael's topic here, where he's written a poem in response to Robert Frost's poem. Is Michael here today? Michael Aubrey?
Yeah.
That's Tib. You know, I get confused, you see. I get confused between the Michaels and the Tibs. So... Can you change it on
your... I tried, but no. It's an official name.
Official name. Okay. So you are officially Michael.
No.
But no, you're not Tib. You prefer Tibby, yeah?
Yeah, for 20 years I have been called by Tib.
Okay. Well, it's bureaucracy for you, isn't it?
Officially Michael? Both. Three names
But I would like to show you that a number of you, for instance... Let's look at Tom first, have created their WordPress accounts. And here is Tom's comment, Tom's thoughts of mine, April the 1st. Is that the one I commented on, or was
right,
it
that one there
this one here?
Well, you actually commented on the majority of them.
Yeah, I think this is the one.
Yeah.
I made a comment here on Thomas's...
Yeah, if you click on the comment...
Yeah. I'll just read the first paragraph. Well, yes, right now I'm confused as all hell, but I completely understand, and yes, I realize the contradiction. The thing I'm completely confused over is the way some act in ways that are superficial and downright annoying. It seems that they themselves are confused as to what it is they want throughout their life, and that is okay. As I myself am currently doing some reassessments as to my life and what cards I hold close to my chest, and subsequently which cards I put out on the table. I have previously stated that I don't know what my future holds, nor do I know exactly what it is that I need. However, with that being said, I'm able to sit back, reflect on what my life has and how I need to change some aspects to do it. I'm also doing some deeper reflection as to where my life is now and the options that are presenting themselves so I can change my life, some for the better, others not so much. What I want to say about Thomas's entry here, and a lot of his entries, and this applies to many of you, is it seems to me that blogging, where you have an audience, where you're working with a group, can be a really valuable space to develop your own sense of direction and own sense of purpose. I mean, writing is a gift that human beings have access to as a way of clarifying and solidifying your own thoughts. You know, why do writers write? They don't necessarily write for publication or for an audience. They write to clarify their own thinking. And I think on this particular quote here, I wrote this comment.
Can I just jump in there and say that?
Please, say
everything,
something.
Everything that's on that,
yeah,
is what's been going through my head at
yeah.
the time that I've been writing. So
yeah.
Everyone who has read it or wants to read it, it's when I'm typing, it's just whatever's in my head that comes out.
Right.
I have no idea what's coming out
yeah.
until it comes out. You know, I could be in a really bad mood and just type away and I feel better about it. Or I could be in a really good mood and just type away about what my life has,
yeah.
And
yeah.
You know, I don't mean to like reflect that in my writing, but it's
that's
what
comes
out.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes I sit back and go, "Well, did I actually write that?"
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But
good. So, you know, you're really supporting what I'm saying here, that the process of writing kind of opens up areas that you might not have even thought about, takes you in directions that you might not have considered, opens up new ways of thinking. And that's what writing is about, I think. And what I wrote here, this comment, I like very much the directness and clarity of the way you think about your life and the way you address the problems you're facing. It seems to me that while you have a sense of uncertainty about where your life is heading, there is also the comfort in the fact that you're able to express this uncertainty so clearly and say also what it is that you need to make you feel whole. Your quest is in fact everyone's quest, but not everyone is so up against it in the way you are. This could in fact be a real strong point. Many people go around from day to day doing what they do by habit and don't have any strong sense of why they are doing what they are doing. But I sense in your writing that there is a real need waiting to express itself. And in one very definite way, this need is being expressed through the very act of writing this blog about your situation. It is helping you to get issues out of your head down onto the screen. There, everything can be seen more objectively, can be thought about, can be reviewed, can be acted upon. The Country Kid, this is an awesome blog. Thank you very much. So, you know, I really mean that. I felt that there was something really strong coming through there. But one of the reasons I'm showing you Thomas's blog... Yeah, please, go.
Oh, no, I'm just saying...
Yep.
I'm a writer. I've written two books.
Yep.
And the last 4 days I've just added 18,000 words to the first book, which I haven't touched for a long time.
Yep.
Because I felt it wasn't hot enough.
Yep.
And I've got a lot more to go.
Yep.
But I lost that ability for a little while to make up the stories and the characters that I do.
Yep.
And all of a sudden it's come back.
Fantastic.
So
you're starting to work again with it.
Yeah. So,
but it's like...
Like they interviewed Jeffrey Archer with Alan Jones did last week, or a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
He said, where do your stories and where do your characters come from? He said, I've got no idea.
Yeah.
And that's like with me.
That's
when
right.
I'm typing,
that's
they
right.
just come.
That's it.
They just come up. You
that's
know?
Right.
Like,
I think a lot
but
of
the
writers.
First books,
yeah.
My first book,
yeah.
I mean this, is going to be bigger than 50 shows ago.
Yeah. Fantastic. That's great. So,
as in thickness wise, or.
Hmm?
As in thickness wise, or.
It will be huge. I just can't believe what comes out when I type.
So what I'm trying to just suggest is that, well, Michael and the Country Kid, or Thomas as he calls himself, and over here, Michael, here he is sharing a thought a moment in time. This is Michael Ken. Who's that? That's you. That's you. Now, Michael Ken here, this is very precious as well. I love this photograph. Here I find myself sitting in a coffee shop by the roadside in the middle of King's Cross. To my right, a constant flow of cars drift past in succession. That should be spelling corrected. It's
yeah, I know.
Okay. With my iPhone before me in my hands as I attempt to capture all that streams through my thoughts and resides in my mind. Headphones on, soft, calm, mellow tunes fills and filter my ears, drowning out the external commotions of a busy street, lost in my own thoughts and reflections. I'm in my own private plane dimension. The coffee and breakfast I ordered sits undisturbed before me, predisposed. Living life, embracing and being present in this moment is a gift many of us neglect and too often take for granted. To actually feel, attaching a real emotion to reality of time and space, defining the experience of here and now, how do I capture this in mere words? It is a beautiful day without a single cloud in sight for as far as I can see. Truly breathtaking, appreciating that which is life and all that it holds. As I believe and have heard, we only have today and this very moment, as tomorrow is not definite, nor is it certain. Even in the confusion, the hustle and bustle, frantic day-to-day rush of the big city of Sydney, people seemingly forgetting to even stop and breathe. Remember, it is the simple things that bring joy. Remove all doubt and clear all thoughts. it is easy as bringing it all back to basics. Take time and receive the world through your senses, sight, sound, touch, smell, and taste. And guess what I'm feeling in this moment is gratitude, contentment, clarity, and maybe even a little piece of hope. I just wanted to share this with you as I believed everyone deserves to feel these emotions I've identified. Have a great day, people. It's beautiful. So, and then there's a lovely analysis here of the Shakespeare event that we went to. So this is another blog, and I think I did make a comment on here. Let me have a look. What did I say? I said, "Hi Michael, this is a fantastic first blog." It wasn't, it was his third blog. "Not only do you write with great clarity, but your piece has real feeling in it. You capture a vitally important part of our human experience that we can all relate to, and your photo goes so well with the description of your experience. Well done." Now both Thomas and Michael have taken the leap into WordPress. Now, why am I not able to connect here a moment? What's going on? So, WordPress, as you may or may not know, is a public arena. And with a public arena, you have to... Well, I've actually made some comments in your unit outline. You need to take care with your expression. You need to make sure that what you write is publicly... not offensive. But the benefit of going to a WordPress URL is that your friends and family can read, other students at ACU can read, so it's your choice. So what I've put up here now in Leo, I've put two things. I've put, well, there's the practice space for your blog, which you know about. And I've said here, post your WordPress URL here. This is the place to add your WordPress URL so that everyone in the group can find you. It's easy to find you if you're in this practice space, but once you get your own URL, we've got to know what your URL is. And some of you might not have read Michael or Thomas's blog because you might not have known where they are. So that everyone in the group can find you if you've decided to go public. This is not compulsory. You do not have to go there. If you want to stay within the privacy of Leo, that's fine. But some of you I know like to have a wider audience. Maybe you would like to write a sentence or two about yourself, that's in here, and then present your WordPress URL. To do all this, simply click on Add a New Discussion Topic and then type in your information. Here is my URL, you all know who I am.
Or alternatively.
Yep.
When you go into that post of WordPress URL,
yep.
If you're on WordPress, even here, can I just
sure.
go on?
Yeah, go on, do it, yep. I'm not in edit mode here, though.
Yeah,
no,
it's all good.
Yep.
You don't have to. Just here,
yep.
where it's got leo.acu.edu.au,
yep.
if you right-click on that, oh, I highlight all of that and go across to it, right click. Sorry.
Yep.
You can highlight it and then you can actually copy that.
Copy it straight.
Straight into it. So that way you don't have to remember everything that's up top.
Yeah.
Which does help.
That's good. Thanks, Thomas. That's a great help. So yes, Thomas is saying you don't have to kind of remember your URL. You can just copy it from that status line, copy it and then paste it into here when you go add a new discussion topic. And so
I just got one question.
Yep.
Is it safe to block personal poetry that you write?
Safe to sure.
What happens to it once it's out there? Can people copyright it and use it?
Yeah. That's always a problem.
Yeah.
I mean there is something called Creative Commons, which is a which in theory at least can protect you from having your poems copied. But I mean, as a teacher, I have this problem because sometimes my students go back into my blogs and find a link to what a student has done 4 years ago, and they copy that and make it their own.
I know.
So
especially with poetry, it is unique and.
I think from me as a teacher, I take a lot of it on trust, and ultimately, you know the student and you know what they're capable of, and I'm sure some get through. But
like, just say I blog it, and then later down the track I find that someone's used it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's
a risk you take.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any real safeguard. Yeah. I think the more tricky problems, and I must admit I haven't confronted any in the 10 years I've been doing blogging, is some students might get negative comments from somewhere outside, and they might find that hard to deal with. I mean, you read about these things, you read about people getting kind of cyber attacked by, but I haven't struck it yet, so touch wood. The other thing on here that I just, sorry? It depends what, exactly, it depends what you write. The other thing you need to all know, I'm sure some of you already have because I've seen it, but here is the essay box where you have to post your essay today.
Oh, what? I've printed it.
You have to post it in
here. I can't access Leo.
Not yet. How come?
They haven't given me my student card and number. And
God, we've
got
to sort that out.
That's why I started
to log.
Did
you go last week to the uni?
Yeah, I did, but they didn't give me the...
Okay, we'll try and sort that out today, Michael.
Yeah, I've got
for the meantime, that's fine.
I have the same problem, but I received my student ID and all that, and I've been trying to log on all morning, and
yep.
It's not working.
Well, we've had that problem with a few people,
yes.
With Ian,
yes.
And they had his birth date wrong. That was the problem.
Yeah.
So they could be the same in your situation.
Yeah.
So we'll work that out this afternoon. Can you hang back a little bit after the class? Good. Okay. Yeah, please. Go. This is where you have to put your click. If you click on there,
I think it comes
up. Can you make it bigger?
Yeah,
it
I can.
Yeah.
There it is.
On the blog.
Not on the blog. It says written assignments, and I'm just going to go into. Let me just. So if you go in here, where is it? I'm in the wrong unit now.
Yes.
Here we go down here. If I switch, I'm just going to switch the role to what it looks like when you're looking at it. That's the student view. Then when you click on here, that's where you'll get, it says add submission. So that means, and then you've got your file on your USB, and you simply upload the file. So that, that's where you do it. And just so that some of you are clear about what you've done, if I go into that assignment box as the lecturer, I click on there and it says view all submissions, and I look down here and I see that Michael has submitted for grading, Nicholas has submitted for grading, Joey has submitted for grading, but there's a few of you who have to submit for grading. That's it. Good-o. Okay. So now we're going to come to Henry Lawson. And that
yep. Subject. Somewhere else you told us in the unit, I think it was in the unit outline,
yep.
That for the blogs that we do have,
yep.
And particularly the response, we the copy and pasting URL of that response.
That's right, yeah. What that means is that, well,
I mean, the problem I have is that there's no URL.
No, that's right. Let me clarify that, Derek. That applies if you're using WordPress. If you're using WordPress and you're making, and Thomas is making a comment on Michael, the only way that I can see the comment that he's made on Michael is if he cuts and pastes his comment and makes it a blog of that comment in his own blog and shares Michael's URL. if you're staying within Leo, that's not necessary because I can see everybody's comments on everybody else's stuff. That make clear?
Yeah.
Okay. So let's have a look at Henry Lawson Sweeney. And Henry Lawson is one of my favorite authors. And when we go to the art gallery in a few weeks' time, there is a picture of Henry Lawson. It's a bit like this one here. When he was very, very successful, when he went to London. And when we go there, I'm going to do with you students what I do with all my university students.
Well,
and that is... There's a story about that. I'll tell you a story about that. But no, what we have to do, we have to kneel in front of the painting. We all get down and genuflect in front of the painting. Holy Henry Lawson. Henry Lawson, he had a really difficult life in Australia. And at one point in his life, just to come back to Thomas's comment about tickets to London, Lawson said that if you're an Australian writer, he could recommend one of two things. Either go steerage on a boat, which is in other words, go and hide yourself on a boat and get yourself taken to Europe, or buy yourself a mirror and a gun, study the cranium and shoot yourself in the head. And Lawson was, you know, he was angry at the way that Australia treated artists and writers. He felt very aggrieved. I think it was partly his own fault, but certainly it was also, you know, we live in a country that's dominated by making money and mining gold and mining lead, and the artists in this country traditionally have not had a very strong voice. Maybe it's been like that in many cultures, but there are some cultures where artists are elevated. But in Australia, Henry Lawson felt it very difficult to be an artist, and he suffered. You know, he became an alcoholic later in life, and he used to stagger up the street in North Sydney, up to North Sydney Post Office when he got his pension check, and his friends used to call him into the pubs on the way up towards the North Sydney Post Office, and the story goes that by the time he got to the top, he'd spent all his money and he was as drunk as hell. He was thrown into prison. His wife left him. You know, he had a pretty traumatic final couple of years. And yet, ironically, once he died, there was a state funeral for him in Sydney. I might show you a film of that, not this week, but next week, but a short clip about that state funeral. But he was an amazing observer of human nature. And this poem, Sweeney, shows painfully how he was attracted to people that, in a way, kind of mirrored his own destiny. And Sweeney is just this poem is a wonderful portrait of a human being. What's really interesting about this poem as a poem is that it's a ballad. And what a ballad is, let me just get my pens at work again here. So a ballad, it's got a very regular rhythm. And it usually has a narrative. What is a narrative? A narrative is a story that runs through it. Regular, get a better pen than this one. Regular rhythmic pattern. And often ballads are conversational. Which is to say, it's a little bit like, you know, having a conversation with somebody. And it's unlike, say, the poems we've looked at in the last few weeks. We looked at Galway Kinnell's poem on blackberries, which was very kind of dense, symbolic poetry. It was talking about blackberries as a kind of... The act of eating blackberries was like writing a poem, or blackberries were like a poem. And then we had Judith Wright's Wattle Tree, where the wattle tree symbolized for her what she was reaching for as a poet, the one word of gold. So there was a kind of an intensity of symbolic writing, an intensity of use of images, of metaphors, of similes. And in a ballad, it's more relaxed. It's a narrative. So that's why some people love Henry Lawson, because it's poetry, but it's not hard. You don't have to work so hard. It tells you the story. Let's read Sweeney. This is page 23. It was somewhere in September, springtime, and the sun was going down. You got it yet, Norm? Got it? Yep, good. It was somewhere in September, and the sun was going down, when I came in search of copy to a Darling River town. Now, Lawson was employed by the Bulletin to go around country towns and find copy, that is stories, copy from the towns to write about. And he wrote many different poems about people that he met along the way. And Thomas knows something about these places, don't you?
Yes.
You told me before. Just tell us quickly what you do know.
Okay. Henry Lawson, when he first started writing for the Bulletin, went out to Burke. And then that's where the Darling River town is that he's talking about in this. Out the back of Burke. And he didn't just go there. He went all the way down to a little town on the Murrumbidgee.
Yep.
And that little town's called Leeton, Leeton. And
fruit growing district.
Yes, it's fruit growing and rice growing.
Yeah.
And the house that Henry lived in Leeton, it has just been finished being restored back to its former glory, and it still stands in Leeton.
Good, excellent.
For some of you who don't know geographically where Leeton is, Leeton is 5K away from where I grew up.
Right, okay.
So I went to school in Leeton.
Yep.
It's the major shire that I'm part of. My hometown's part of.
Fantastic.
So, yeah.
So Lawson's a bit of a kind of a hero in that part of the world.
Yeah, 30 of his pieces that he's written were written in Leeton.
Yep, fantastic.
So.
Beautiful. So Lawson, he was commissioned by the Bulletin to go and find copy from these various towns, and he did. Now, there's a longer story about all this, and that is that when Henry Lawson was around, there was also another very famous writer around, Banjo Patterson. And Banjo Patterson and Henry Lawson, they really had a ding-dong fight about, you know, what Australia was really like. And Banjo Patterson, you may recall, wrote The Man from Snowy River, in which he kind of celebrates the heroism in the bush and the people who go and chase the ponies up the mountainside. And Henry Lawson felt, well, that's all well and good, but there are poverty-stricken people in the country towns, and you need to respect their lives. And Lawson wrote about many of the people in country towns who were having real difficulties. One of his famous stories is The Drover's Wife, about a woman with three kids, and she has to look after the property on her own because her husband has to travel, you know, kilometres away for work, and he's away months on end. So Lawson really tapped into people, the difficulties of the time, and his agenda was really to try and show the government that the government needed to give more care and attention to the working class. Patterson was a lawyer. Lawson said, Patterson, you've only seen the bush from on horseback with your big lawyer's hat. You haven't seen the real bush. So there was this long debate. Ultimately, Patterson became, you know, wealthy through his poetry and his stories, and Lawson didn't. You know, people like to hear good stories, they don't like to hear sad stories. Yep.
The one of the major reasons why Lawson didn't become wealthy was because at the time, Banjo and Henry were both, their books were both published by Angus and Coote.
Yep,
or
Angus and
Robertson.
Yep.
Sorry, at the same time. Angus and Robertson basically took all of Henry Lawson's commission, whereas Banjo Patterson took all of his commission. So Banjo got all his money,
yep.
And Angus and Robinson got all
Henry Lawson's. Yeah. Good. Look, I should point out to you too why I put this up here. This is one of the ironies of history. Lawson was sort of treated badly by the government of his day. But if you go around the Writer's Wharf, which is from Circular Quay round to where we went the other day to the drama theatre, on the footpath, you'll see a big brass plaque. And the brass plaque has actually got on it a stanza from this poem that we're about to read. What we are and how we see ourselves evoke us fundamentally from the... Let's see if I can read it better on here.
From the written and spoken word.
What we are and how we see ourselves evolves fundamentally from the written and spoken word. This is the wrong thing. This is not... I didn't mean to have this up here. This is the beginning of the Writer's Walk. The Writer's Walk demonstrates that this evolutionary process continues to channel the thoughts and perceptions, the hopes and the fears of writers who've known this great city and its people. I've put the wrong bloody one up there. I wanted to put Henry Lawson one up there. Let me see if I can drag it up, because I had it yesterday. Writer's Walk, where are we? Yesterday. There it is. And of afternoons in cities when the rain is on the land, visions come to me of Sweeney with his bottle in his hand, with the stormy night behind him and the pub veranda post, and I wonder why he haunts me more than any other ghost. Sweeney, 1893. Henry Lawson, born in New South Wales of Norwegian descent. His prose and verse provided humorous, sentimental and tragic views of life in city and the bush. So you can see that when you go around the Writer's Walk. You can also, if you walk through the Botanic Gardens and come out of the Botanic Gardens near the Art Gallery, which is where we'll go there when we go to the Art Gallery, there's a big statue of Henry Lawson and the loaded dog next to him. So he's famous in our city, despite the fact of, you know, his tragic end in our city. Let's read the poem. It was somewhere in September, and the sun was going down, when I came in search of copy to a darling river town, might be Leeton. Come and have a drink, we'll call it. That's the name that Lawson is giving this town, because most country towns are like that. Come and have a drink, that's what towns say to you. Come and have a drink. 'Tis a fitting name, I think. And 'twas raining for a wonder up at Come and Have a Drink. Well, it's pretty amazing, says Lawson, that it was raining at this town, which usually says Come and Have a Drink, or it's called Come and Have a Drink. Neath the public house veranda, neath means beneath, neath the public house veranda, I was resting on a bunk when a stranger rose before me and he said that he was drunk. He apologised for speaking. There was no offence, he swore, but he somehow seemed to fancy that he'd seen my face before. No offence, he said. I told him that he needn't mention it, for I might have met him somewhere. I had travelled round a bit, and I knew a lot of fellas in the bush and in the streets, but a fellow can't remember all the fellas that he meets. Very old and thin and dirty were the garments that he wore, just a shirt and a pair of trousers and a boot and nothing more. He was wringing wet and really in a sad and sinful plight, and his hat was in his left hand and a bottle in his right. His brow was broad and roomy, but its lines were somewhat harsh. and a sensual mouth was hidden by a drooping fair moustache. His hairy chest was open to what poets called the wind, and I could have bet a thousand that his pants were gone behind. He agreed, "You can't remember all the chaps you chanced to meet." And he said his name was Sweeney. People lived in Sussex Street. He was camping in a stable, but he swore that he was right, only for the blanky horses walking over him all night. He'd apparently been fighting, for his face was black and blue, and he looked as though the horses had been treading on him too. But an honest, genial twinkle in the eye that wasn't hurt seemed to hint of something better, spite of drink and rags and dirt. It appeared that he mistook me for a long-lost mate of his, one of whom I was the image both in figure and in phiz, phiz short for physiognomy. He'd have had a letter from him if the chap were living still, for they'd carried swags together from the Gulf to Broken Hill. Sweeney yarned a while and hinted that his folks were doing well, and he told me that his father kept the Southern Cross Hotel. I think the Southern Cross Hotel is down at Central, is still there, opposite Central Station. And I wondered if his absence was regarded as a loss when he left the elder Sweeney, landlord of the Southern Cross. He was born in Parramatta, and he said, with humour grim, that he'd like to see the city ere the liquor finished him. But he couldn't raise the money. He was damned if he could think what the government was doing. Here he offered me a drink. I declined. 'Twas self-denial, and I lectured him on booze, using all the hackneyed arguments that preachers mostly use, things I'd heard in temperance lectures. I was young and rather green, and I ended by referring to the man he might have been. Then a wise expression struggled with the bruises on his face, though his argument had scarcely any bearing on the case. What's the good of keeping sober? Fellas rise and fellas fall. What I might have been and wasn't doesn't trouble me at all. Hick. But he couldn't stay to argue, for his beer was nearly gone. He was glad, he said, to meet me, and he'd see me later on. He guessed he'd have to go and get his bottle filled again, and he gave a lurch and vanished in the darkness and the rain. And of afternoons in cities, when the rain is on the land, visions come to me of Sweeney with his bottle in his hand, with the stormy night behind him. Sorry, folks. I really hate that, but I had to do it. It came at the wrong moment. And of afternoons in cities... Let me just turn that off in case they try again. And of afternoons in cities, when the rain is on the land, visions come to me of Sweeney, with his bottle in his hand, with the stormy night behind him and the pub veranda post, and I wonder why he haunts me more than any other ghost. Still I see the shearers drinking at the township in the scrub, and the army praying nightly at the door of every pub. I'm not sure what the army... You think it's the Salvation Army? The army praying nightly at the door of every pub, and the girls who flirt and giggle with the bushmen from the west. But the memory of Sweeney overshadows all the rest. Well, perhaps it isn't funny. There were links between us two. He had memories of cities. He had been a jackaroo. And perhaps his face forewarned me of a face that I might see from a bitter cup reflected in the wretched days to be. His own face. I mean, it's amazing that he wrote this, and he kind of had almost a sixth sense that what he was seeing there was a reflection of what he'd see reflected in his own cup later in life. I suppose he's tramping somewhere where the bushmen carry swags. cadging round the wretched stations with his empty tucker bags. And I fancy that of evenings when the track is growing dim, what he might have been and wasn't comes along and troubles him. Wow, it's an amazing poem. I mean, it's all these things, ballad, narrative, conversational, yet somehow it captures another human being with their struggles, their troubles, their suffering. Lawson seems to have kind of got into the soul of Sweeney. What do you think he means by that last line? What he might have been and wasn't comes along and troubles him. What do you think?
It's a question of, you know, regrets about all he's got left. Just absolutely the dregs. And, you know, what might have been, what should have been. I mean, that'll just kill you.
Yeah, I mean, Sweeney seems to boldly challenge that question earlier in the poem, doesn't it? Doesn't he? What's the good of keeping sober? What I might have been and wasn't doesn't trouble me at all, he says to Lawson halfway through the poem. But Lawson kind of questions that, seems to raise that as a question.
I think it's an existential question. And I think whilst he may have an opinion at one point in time,
yeah,
there's plenty of hours in the day to reflect on a man's lifetime.
That's right. Have I? And it's interesting to ask, you know, what does Lawson actually think about Sweeney's situation, condition? He doesn't give his opinion very explicitly, but I'm wondering what he's trying to communicate to us about Sweeney's life story. I wonder, what did you think he was trying to communicate about Sweeney's life story? Was he sympathetic? Was he critical?
Oh, it's taunting. I wonder why he haunts them more than any other ghost. I mean, it's a bit, what do you call it, sanctimonious. You know, it's a bit preachy.
What do you mean by sanctimonious,
well,
Chris?
Holier than thou. You know, I'm a better person because I can tell you should stop drinking, and I'm like, yeah.
Is he like Henry Lawson? He used to be something and he wasn't?
Well, that's what the message we're getting here is that Lawson became like Sweeney later on. So Lawson is kind of feeling very empathetic with this character, and I don't know what year Lawson wrote this, but he says that he was young. He says, I was young and rather green, and telling him things that he'd heard in a temperance lecture, ended by referring to the man he might have been. I think that Lawson, I'm not sure if I agree with you, Chris, I kind of get the feeling that Lawson is not really happy with having given him this advice. Lawson is about critical of himself for being so, you know...
Yeah, upstanding.
Upstanding, that's right.
He doesn't have a choice. He knows that that's the right advice to give him. Can't give him any other advice.
Can't give him any other advice, that's right.
And he's also, you know, from the first time of the premonition, he's not just the one of the mind. So
no, that's
right. He knows that he's sliding down the slippery slide and he's going to end up exactly where...
Yeah, premonition is a good word, very good word in this context. So it's as if it's
giving those, you know, Salvation Army lines to himself.
That's
that's
right.
But he's also not listening.
Yeah, yeah.
And Sweeney's not listening for either.
Good. Now I'm also interested in the way in which Lawson has actually described the character. In 1, 2, 3, the fourth and the fifth stanza, how does the description of his outer clothing, but also his facial features, capture something about the man? Very old and thin and dirty were the garments that he wore, just a shirt and pair of trousers and a boot and nothing more. He was wringing wet and really in a sad and sinful plight, and his hat was in his left hand and a bottle in his right. His brow was broad and roomy, but its lines were somewhat harsh, and a sensual mouth was hidden by a drooping fair moustache. His hairy chest was open to what poets called the wind, and I would have bet 1,000 that his pants were gone behind. What impression do we get of Sweeney both now and before? Do we get any hint of the man that he was and the man that he is now, and any hint of Lawson's attitude towards him?
It was a trailer. He'd done the
hard yards.
Done the long hauls.
He's done the long hauls.
Yeah, the driving, like, majority of around, especially around that time.
Yeah.
With cattle driving and that.
Yeah.
It was, and still somewhat is, quite long. Minimum, there's some that are 10 days.
Yeah.
But back then it was 21 plus days.
Yeah, right. It's an incredibly harsh life.
Yeah.
And you know what comes through, though? There is this sympathy and pity for the man who's had such an incredible hard life, and yet, you know, you've got this, the sensual mouth that was hidden by a drooping fair moustache. You get these glimpses of the man underneath, the man underneath this rather painful, horrific exterior.
I think when you say premonition, he's looking at himself. You said he had a hard life near the end of his life.
Yes.
So he's looking at him, a younger man.
That's right.
He's looking at this guy thinking, that's the way I'm going to end
that
up.
That could be me.
That
could be me.
And it was him.
And it was him, that's right. That's why when you read this poem now, with the benefit of history, it's a very sad poem to kind of see Lawson himself reflected in Sweeney's experience.
That's why if you want to go, if you can go back in time, you can change it.
That's right. Can you repair the past? That's a question. Can you repair the past? It's a big existential question, Joey, isn't it? Can you repair the past? You know what? I think you can. I do. I seriously do. I think that, for instance, if you've had a really difficult relationship with your father, as I have had, I know about it, then it is possible to repair that, to go back and find ways of understanding why the other person was as they were, and attitudes in you can change, feelings and sympathies can shift. So I don't think the past is locked away. Even if your parent or the person you're thinking about is dead, there are still ways in which that can be repaired.
But can it actually be repaired, or are you just changing the future?
Well, that's an interesting existential question in itself. I think we need to have a cup of coffee. And after coffee, we're coming back to a very different kind of poll.
By the way...